When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Oh man, it's 6 p.m. and that means it's time for the Bullpen, starring the one and only Joe George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
Listen and be fascinated as the longtime producer becomes untethered by lesser talent and can truly talk sports the way he was meant to, with no reins or restrictions, with stellar takes and perfect diction.
I'm assistant regional manager. I should know first.
Assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, okay.
Now, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen with Joe George.
Welcome in to the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. You can come hang out with us on the text line, 713-780-3776. HRMP listener line as well, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. And, of course, now on YouTube, just find ESPN Houston. Abigail alongside me today. And we're going to do something at the end of the show. You know, I'm trying to think as someone that trains the producers, how do I want to teach Abigail about sports radio? Get her more comfortable to talk on the air so Joel Blank will stop giving her such a hard time. And I figured to myself, what's the cheesiest, corniest thing I can do? A draft. We all know it's what sports radio is all about. It's what it's built on. Drafts, Mount Rushmore season. So we'll do a Valentine's Day draft at the end of the show. The best part, the worst part, the best place or style of dinner, and the best thing to do for you singles out there. So in case you're listening, you have no plans tonight, maybe we can help you out. But we have to talk about the Houston Astros because, well, they showed up to camp today. And I thought it was going to be a normal day of spring training. First day, everyone's there, good vibes. Joe Espada, maybe he would do what he actually did, which was name a closer. That kind of surprised me, just that it was so quick and so sudden. And we'll talk about that a little bit that more in the next segment. But Justin Verlander, he has shoulder inflammation. He is throwing a little bit on the ground. JP France also hurt. And it's just not what you want to hear when the season starts. Now, it doesn't sound like either injury is going to be something that's going to be a big-time effect for the Houston Astros in the long term. Now, it's not like, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, it's not Lance McCullers. It's not Luis Garcia, who are not going to be back till July. But the fact is like when you think about the Houston Astros, we all know the reality of the situation. They're not always the most honest, upfront. Sometimes they play stuff close to the vest, if you want to take it on the less mean side of the conversation. You know, we thought Lance McCullers was good, and he was. And then all of a sudden, we got to spring training last year, and he had a setback. And then he just never pitched, and never pitched, and never pitched. And then now he's not going to pitch until July. So it's just this question mark, I think, of like really what is going to be the season for JV and JP France. Because like I want to believe that they're being fully honest and transparent with us, and that it's not that bad. But with the Astros, with what we've seen, sometimes they try to take these injuries and let it play out a little bit. And then things go not wrong, but they're more severe than they have let us know throughout the entire time as we wait. And like I said, Lance McCullers is really the best example of that. Like, we thought Lance McCullers was okay, like, and that he was going to be fine. And then we found out that he wasn't. So, like, would it shock me if one of JP France or Justin Verlander had a more serious injury than we thought? Think back to Justin Verlander the last time. Like, this is a guy that Chandler Rome reported when he was with the Chronicle that Justin Verlander was going to have Tommy John. Then Chandler got dragged through the mud for like 3 or 4 months before Justin Verlander eventually had Tommy John. Now, they tried to go an alternative route and tried to make sure that, you know, or tried to find a way to not have TJ back in 2020. It just didn't happen. So I have my doubts that what they're saying is totally and truly honest. Well, let's hear from Justin Verlander himself. Here is Justin Verlander talking about the hiccup that he had this offseason.
We haven't really sat down and discussed it yet, obviously. I have my thoughts. I mean, interestingly, I'm a little bit behind schedule right now. I had a little hiccup early on that's resolved itself, but I have to be really cautious with how I'm building up. I guess my body doesn't respond the same at 40 as it does at 25. So, you know, I'm a couple weeks behind. So I think all that thought going into those conversations will play into that. So, I mean, that all makes sense to me.
And like I say, he's just a couple weeks behind. He was later asked about opening day. He didn't even totally rule it out. So it's a wait and see for Justin Verlander. And like my guess is, like my gut tells me that even though I have this kind of somewhat pessimistic view, I guess you could say that he'll still be back probably after the first month of the season at the absolute latest. Because what I do think that like is important and part of that conversation is that like he acknowledges the fact that obviously his body is going to respond much different at 40 than 25. And I would rather not have Justin Verlander for the first month of the season and that he's going to take it slow. Like it will not be as enjoyable to start the season when they play the Yankees and then the Rangers. And, you know, they've got some other good teams early on in the season that you'd like to have Justin Verlander out there for. But 1 month of Justin Verlander not pitching versus him being there for hopefully a World Series run is obviously a big time thing. With JP France, no disrespect to JP France, I'm way less concerned. And we'll kind of go into this a little bit in the next segment about what I think the Astros need to do with this. But it's just, I'm not that concerned about the fifth starter in the rotation. Like you have Ronel Blanco, who you could stretch back out. You have Spencer Arrighetti, who if you want to start the clock on, you could. It's all those things are fine options if they really truly do believe it's very short term. And like we said, like there are reinforcements coming, not till July, but at some point in theory, Lance McCullers, because I say in theory because of him, he might be back. He should be back, but Luis Garcia most likely will be. Like I'm 99% sure Luis Garcia will pitch this year for the Houston Astros. Until he actually does it, I'm a 1% belief that Lance McCullers will pitch for the Astros. Here is Joe Espada, new manager of the Astros, named Josh Hader, the closer today. Here is Joe Espada talking about Justin Verlander and then right into JP France and their injuries.
You know what? I'm not. And just because the way he's been, you know, our conversations, he's not giving me a reason to be concerned. But again, he's behind, and I trust JP's judgment, and our job is just to make sure that he's ready and help us throughout the season.
Yeah, so also JP France is also going to be a little bit behind. He has some inflammation on his shoulder. So he is playing catch, but he's also going to be a little bit behind in his throwing progression.
So, like, Joe Espada makes it seem like I'm making a whole lot of something out of nothing. But it's just going into the season when you have a bunch of injuries already piled on to your roster – It sends up red flags and concerns about these guys. Here's one more from Joe Espada, just saying that he's not worried yet.
Not really, not yet, you know, because he's early. And I really trust our depth throughout the minor leagues. And that's something that we have shown in the past, that when a man goes down, we have someone who's ready to step up. But I think he's early, and I think time let us know where we go from there.
And I'm not going to nitpick too much Joe Espada, but I do think part of that conversation is or part of what he said that is important to take out is yet, because yeah, he's probably right. There's no real reason for him to be worried yet, but you don't have, in my opinion, I think he's wrong about the depth in the minor league. Like while I like Spencer Arrighetti, I don't think he's this prospect that we should all expect to come up and have immediate success. Now, he's your fifth starter, so it's like I was saying, like, it's not the end of the world if JP's not there, and if Spencer Arrighetti's not great, that's fine as well. But still, I don't think that depth is necessarily there like that they want it to be. It could be. I could be wrong. I'm not going to sit here and act like I know everything about prospects and what's going on in Sugar Land and Corpus Christi and all these places. But what I can tell you is I can read prospect rankings, and the Astros pitchers are not on that list. Now, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, those guys, when they came out of nowhere during the pandemic season, they weren't necessarily, you know, or Luis Garcia, I guess it was, they weren't really on prospect rankings either. So there are possibilities that it could all be fine. But I believe that you have to have some kind of way to address this. And the reason why I say that now is because last year, I didn't agree. Like Chandler Rome wrote an article for The Athletic talking about the Astros not adding depth at the starting pitcher position last year. I did not agree with that. Now, part of that meant that I might not have known what he knew, what others knew, but I thought last year going into the season, I saw 7-8 guys that could contribute to the Astros rotation and they would be totally fine. But the injury bug hit them so hard and so fast last year that they had to acquire Verlander. And even after they acquired Verlander, the injury bug was still getting to them pretty bad. But because you have Garcia and McCullers already hurt, and you just have these small questions, you know, at this time about two of your other starters, I do think Dana Brown should take a different approach to this offseason than the Astros took last year. And I know last year was weird because Dana Brown came in late, learning what's going on, the injuries, like kind of the depth of the roster, the minor leagues. Like he didn't know too much, in my opinion. Like he had just taken this job. But this year, when he met with the media today, and he said this numerous times, he's always looking for starting pitching. He's always looking to find someone, whether that's free agency, through trade, just evaluating your minor league system. They're always looking for someone. I do think even if JP France and Justin Verlander, things, you know, pick up, the pace picks up quick, and they're going to be ready for that first week of the season, you know, when you start off with the Yankees, that the Astros, I think, would be making a mistake that if they don't add Michael Lorenzen or some cheap veteran pitcher. I'm not going to ask the Houston Astros to break the bank once again and go get Blake Snell. I don't think that's realistic. I'm not wasting my time with Trevor Bauer personally. Like the person, the player, I'm not a believer in either of them. So I'm out on that conversation. I just don't have that interest. I kind of get why people are. Like I know earlier I said you got smoked last year and I was definitely wrong. I have no problem admitting when I'm wrong. He had a very good year last year in Japan. But he still is a guy that, like, when you look at his career, he peaked out at a point in LA when the spider tack stuff was at its height in Major League Baseball. And I just kind of question if he has the ability to be that guy ever again. I think Trevor Bauer sent a middle finger to Major League Baseball and said, if you're not going to stop these other guys from cheating, I'm going to cheat harder and better than everyone else. I firmly believe that. I can't prove it, but just based on the way he talked about that stuff, he kind of alluded to it. So I think that adding a veteran starting pitcher is important to this roster. And frankly, because you don't want them to also be in the same situation that Verlander and JP France are in, you kind of have to choose someone specifically that, you know, you feel like that they've really done the work. And I guess you have to get lucky with that. Like, you have to hope that a player like a Michael Lorenzen, just as an example, has been putting in the work in the offseason so that he's not behind, even though he's not with the team, as pitchers and catchers have reported. I'm still very optimistic about this Astros season. It's just not a fun day, not a fun way to see the season start for this team. But there are a lot of good things. There are a lot of questions about the Houston Astros stuff. Some fun stuff we're going to see this offseason. We're going to have real position battles, whether it's in center field or in the middle of the bullpen. We're going to figure out who the fifth starter is. This should be I think, one of the more interesting spring training the Houston Astros have had in quite some time. We'll talk about some of the storylines and things I'm looking forward to seeing this upcoming spring training next here on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside The Bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security! That's them right there. Right there.
The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George here with you till 7 o'clock. Abigail behind the glass today. You guys are welcome in at 713-780-3776. One text we got here from 6690. Sign Snell and trade Fromber at the trade deadline. I think that these takes are interesting. I don't know if this is the same person that texted earlier into the Killer Bees about trading Ryan Pressly at the trade deadline. I hear where you're coming from. Like the idea behind it is, well, you sign Blake Snell. He's going to have a contract. Fromber's going to walk after 2025. So you might as well just trade him now and get a bunch of prospects, or, you know, upgrade in center field or in other spots, whatever, and find a way to improve. Same thing with Ryan Pressly. Well, you already have a closer in Josh Hader because he's one of the best closers in baseball and he's going to be the closer for the Astros this year. So why do you need Ryan Pressly? If that's your thought process, I can see where you're coming from, but it's the exact opposite of what I would want to ever do with this team. It sucks that the Astros just kind of let guys walk for nothing. Like, I think in a perfect world, like, you would have at least a little bit of the Tampa Rays model in this organization, where they would have traded some of these great players for prospects to continue to, you know, rebuild and just continue to open that championship window in a better way for a much longer time, which I still think is going to be open for a while. It does feel like it could close quickly. But I would never trade Fromber Valdez right now, at least midseason. You could have really sold me on it this offseason. If you were getting guys, prospects that were major league ready right now, you could have, if the Josh Hader signing would have happened early in the offseason, you could have sold me on the idea of trading Ryan Pressly. But the strength of this team is going to be the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. And I expect Ryan Pressly to figure it out. Like, he has a very good ERA. If you look at just his baseball reference page, he has a very good ERA in all those years in Minnesota, in which he was not the closer. So I know that oftentimes when we talk about closers and changing roles, the immediate belief is that these guys are going to fail. Well, what about Hector Neris? Hector Neris didn't fail. In fact, he was much better as an eighth inning guy than he was as a closer of the Philadelphia Phillies. So, like, it doesn't mean necessarily that Presley's going to struggle. And I also think sometimes when people suggest the idea of trading Ryan Pressly at the deadline, that's kind of what you're referencing. You're kind of referencing the fact that you don't think that you think he's going to be a good guy in the eighth inning, but that's going to completely deplete all of his trade value. Or he's going to be awesome, you just want to get rid of him, but why would you trade someone that's awesome? Like, if you made me choose between the two, I'd trade Fromber. If Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia proved in 2 weeks, I guess, before the deadline, that they were healthy, I'd be the one of the two I would do would be Fromber, but I would not trade either of these guys. I think you could, if Jim Crane wanted to, he could sign Blake Snell right now, and you could look into trading Fromber this offseason, or you just go on the plan that, you know, the Correa-Springer plan, and likely the Alex Bregman plan, that when his contract runs up, you let him walk. 8835 says trade Myers, trade Kessinger and Myers, and France. So it's just trading all these guys to sign Cody Bellinger. Well, you don't have to do that either. Like, Cody Bellinger's a free agent. So if you really wanted to sign him and give him a big contract, you could also do that. I don't think Cody Bellinger would be an option here, because, you know, I've kind of given off my philosophy that I think what we've seen from Jim Crane is that he wants big name guys. And he will spend extra into the luxury tax if you have a certain level of cachet with you within the fan base. Cody Bellinger definitely doesn't have the fan base part of it. Like, until he gets here and starts having success, he would not really be a jersey seller, I would guess, based on what happened with his time with the Dodgers. I'm also just not really sure I want to invest in a guy like that. That was so bad compared to what he was a couple years ago. Yes, he had a great bounce back year, but what if he flops again? And then you're very screwed with that contract. So I'd be a no on Bellinger. I think they're going to figure it out in center field. They're just going to stick with what they have. But that is, to me, one of the top things about spring training that I'm most curious about. It's just, how does it play out? You know, I think the Astros have three good options on any given night to play center field. They're each to a certain level of good. Like Jake Meyer's defense is good. The bat, we know what it is. Mauricio Dubon seems like a good fill-in guy. Solid defense. Pretty decent bat last year. Obviously won the utility gold glove player. So like he's got some chops at multiple positions. And you have Chaz McCormick, where if Jordan Alvarez is going to be your primary left fielder or play more left field than they needed last year, as they suggested, Chaz McCormick makes a lot of sense in center. What I think the Astros are hoping for, and what I'm kind of hoping for this team, is I would like to see one of Myers or Dubon emerge in a way that it just kind of wipes this conversation. That you have the ability to have Jordan Alvarez as your DH or in left field when you want, and Chaz can play in center or in left, but it would be nice for the Astros this spring training if Jake Meyers kind of finally figured it out. Like, we all like Jake Meyers going back to, 2019, up until he got hurt. Well, I think he got hurt in the White Sox series, the same as Lance McCullers, or somewhere around that time when he went up over the wall and he hurt his shoulder. He just hasn't been the same guy since. But there's a reason why, you know, I like James Click. James Click believed in Jake Meyers. I don't think I believed in Jake Meyers as much, because it probably cost James Click his job. But there's still something there that this is I'm fine with this being the last opportunity to give Jake Meyers a shot. If it goes past the season, I'm out. Like, I think if it bombs in spring training early in the season, I think you have to aggressively find some kind of alternative for at least the rest of the year, and then hope that Jacob Melton is this prospect that Dana Brown has talked about. You know, if he is, I think some of the prospect rankings have him as like the 100th best prospect in all of baseball. But if Jacob Melton can be your everyday center fielder, that's a huge win, but that's just not right now. With the closer thing, though, with Ryan Pressly, this has been pointed out multiple times. You know, since the day Josh Hader signed, we've heard Josh Hader speak multiple times, whether it's through podcast interviews, MLB Network, meeting with the media today, his original press conference. We've heard Joe Espada multiple times. We've heard Dana Brown multiple times talk about this. We haven't heard Ryan Pressly. And while I do believe, like I just said, that he can be fine as an eighth inning closer, it does feel suspiciously quiet. The fact that they met in Joe Espada's office on Tuesday, yesterday, and as a group to let, you know, Pressly know that Hader is going to be the closer this season when both guys are available, and then we didn't hear from Pressly at all today. It's not a red flag, but I am curious what he's going to say. Like, he does to me appear to be someone that is often, he seems transparent, I think. Like, I don't know if you guys feel that way, if you would feel that way, but he does feel like a transparent person. So I don't think that if Ryan Pressly was very upset about this, that he wouldn't let us know, at least in some way, shape, or form. CJ Fresh here on Twitch says, hopefully Fromber is back to being one of the best pitchers in baseball. He will be at times. Like Fromber will be at times one of the best pitchers in baseball. I do firmly believe that. I just don't know about, what he is all the time. And, like, that's kind of the reason why I'm not super big into him getting the contract extension. King of Twitch calls, someone else called Fromber Wash. Fromber was Wash. He needs a dog for therapy. I mean, you know what? Therapy dogs are great. I went to a soft college that brought therapy dogs around finals time. I won't deny. Like, it existed. It was great. Did I participate? Yes. What's wrong with going to hang out with a bunch of puppies? Am I soft? No. Puppies are great. The other thing about this offseason that I can't wait to see. I'm excited about it. I'm fascinated about it. I know I've talked about this before. If you've listened, I'm fascinated by Force Whitley. I'm so curious because last year at spring training, like I felt great watching Forrest Whitley. I think most of us did. Like he pitched well in spring training at times, or at least the miles per hour was up there. And I'm curious. I'm curious what that battle for, assuming everyone's healthy and available. We know what 7-8-9 is. It's a Christian Javier start like normal, where he only gives you five innings. I'm really curious who's getting the sixth on a consistent basis. You know, opening day, you're playing the New York Yankees. Framber Valdez goes five innings because he had a tough outing, but you're winning by one run. Who is Joe Espada going to hand the ball to in the sixth inning? I hope it's not Montero, even though he was better last year. I hope that, you know, Forrest Whitley can emerge as that guy. Am I doubtful? Yes. Yes, I am. Because like Lance McCullers, it almost doesn't seem like he's a real person. Because we've been hearing, see, I've lived in Houston for 9 years now. I feel like I've been hearing about Forrest Whitley for seven of them. I'm sure that timeline is off, and one of you will car wreck of the day me here, nomination for tomorrow. But we've been hearing about Forrest Whitley for so long. I'm curious if there's anything to him being an answer. Because Dana Brown continues to talk about the middle of the bullpen, and he keeps talking about within the organization. So is it Whitley? Is it Eric Geddy? Like, is it Blanco? I don't think so. Blanco's fine, but like, I don't think he's a guy that can be consistently good on a Major League Baseball roster. I can't wait. Like, I'm fascinated. I'm so glad baseball is back. I wish the injuries weren't here for the Astros, but thankfully they appear to not be super serious. But those are some of the questions and things I'm excited the most about. Poncho says, don't jinx us, Joe. I know what you're up to, Cubby. No. That's not fair. I'm not a jinx for the Astros. I pick the Astros to go to the ALCS every single year, just like all of you do, and they still go. If I was a jinx, that would play out. I'm not Forrest Whitley's jinx. He's been hurt forever. He got suspended, not by me. So I am not a jinx, Poncho. I do not. That's rude. It is Valentine's Day. You should be nice to me today on the Twitch. Not really. Alex was nice to me. Alex didn't nominate for me for the car wreck of the day, Poncho. Why can't you be nice to me today? All right. The five most important storylines of the Texans offseason are what? That's next here on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
What do you do after a full day's work of producing and corralling all of the individual conflicting personalities at ESPN 97.5? Well, if you're jumping Joe George, you do another hour of sports talk. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the bullpen.
Another half hour of the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll have Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis coming up after that. But we got 30 minutes left to go in this show. Talked a lot of Astros so far. CJ Freshwater says three players in top five for MVP this year. What a take. CJ, you could sell me on two players. Yordan Alvarez and then Altuve. But there's no way the Astros would have three top five finishers in the MVP this year. I'm probably going to get it. I haven't done it yet. I'm probably going to get in on Yordan Alvarez MVP odds. I don't know. Man, I got accused of being glass half empty earlier. Sometimes I am. For some reason, I'm glass half full. He says, Bregman. CJ, I hope you're right. I hope I'm glass half full. Or I am, at least, with Yordan Alvarez. I still just have this hope that he's going to figure it out or figure out a way to stay healthy. Because, obviously, he's an incredible, incredible baseball player. Probably the best pure hitter in the game right now. Like, Mike Trout, when he's healthy, Shohei Ohtani, and then Yordan Alvarez, I would guess, by most people's accounts, are the top three. Maybe Juan Soto's in there. I would love to see Yordan Alvarez stay healthy and play like 140 games this season. If he does that, I think Yordan Alvarez will have a really good shot to finish in the top five of the MVP. So, I'm curious like how it ends up going for him this year because, you know, I do expect the Astros to win the AL West. I do expect the Astros to go back to the ALCS Championship Series. I said that twice, basically. And I think the Astros are going to go back to the World Series this year. I think this is, you know, I don't know. It's not the last dance because that was a Bulls thing. And frankly, there's been a lot of last dances, like individually within the Astros organization. But I do think that Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, these guys are going to help lead the Astros to another World Series this year and hopefully win one. Like, once you get there, anything's possible. But I still believe that this team has one, at least one more run this year in them, and I really don't think the window closes after that. 6927 said, for the simple fact that Ohtani is out of the American League is reason to put money on Yordan. For sure. And, you know, in terms of, like, if there's going to be guys that eat votes from each other, I think you'll probably see that with the Yankees with Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. They're also not going to win their division, so I don't know if they'll want to be deserving of winning the MVP. It'd be nice if they changed the award to, like, give Shohei Ohtani his own thing, and then because he's always going to be the most valuable player in baseball when he's pitching and hitting. But, again, the American League this year, Yordan Alvarez, I think the last time I saw he was number three in odds. And I think Soto and Judge are the top two in betting odds, and Yordan Alvarez is right there, not far behind him. How can you say Corey Seager is not a top five hitter in baseball? All right, I just missed him, 9229. Not so aggressive. I didn't say he was not a top five hitter. I just forgot him. I also said top three. I'll include Corey Seager in that list. I hate that he's a Ranger, but he's a damn good baseball player. Like, Corey Seager is very, very, very talented. But the top five storylines for the Houston Texans this offseason. I was thinking about this yesterday, mainly because I saw one of my guys from ESPN Chicago do this, so I'm completely stealing from him, and I'm not ashamed to admit that. But these are my top five storylines of the Texans offseason for 2024. Number five, the health of the roster. In terms of the actual health of it, not in terms of the fact that they have all these free agents and players they have to re-sign. We were discussing this earlier on the Killer Bees that, like, in the perfect offseason or in just a good offseason, that they're going to have to sign 10 starters. Nick Caserio's got a lot of work to do. But the health of Kenyon Green, of Tank Dell, of Derek Stingley Jr., of Jimmy Ward. Now, is it fair to put Sting in that conversation? I say yes, because it does feel like, I mean, he got hurt last offseason, or he was not healthy when their season started. And if the Texans are going to, you know, be in the conversation that we hope they are in 2024, that starts with Derek Stingley Jr. being on the field for probably like 80% of the games this year. And if they open the season, you know, as Brian and I discussed yesterday, against the Kansas City Chiefs in week one, I would like Derek Stingley Jr. to be out there guarding Rashee Rice. Like, that would be an important thing for this roster. So what does the health look like that? Is it a cop-out answer? I don't know. Because it kind of goes into my number three a little bit later with Kenyon Green. But who, like, how healthy can you be to start the season? Because this team got beat by injuries. I guess you can include Tytus Howard in there, but his injury will be fine. I'm sure Tank Dell will be fine too. CJ Stroud said he's already running around. So Tank Dell is going to be no problem, but just be as healthy as humanly possible when the season starts for the Texans next year. Number four, will the Texans make a big trade? I think to me, the answer to this is no, but the reason why it's going to be a top storyline of the offseason is because the Texans are the big kind of free agent and trade target team of the media this offseason. You know, we were just talking on the Killer Bees about trades that could change the offseason, change the NFL. They suggested Haason Reddick from the Eagles for a second rounder. We saw during the playoffs when there was reports that A.J. Brown was unhealthy, one of the offshore sites said if A.J. Brown's not an Eagles team, here are the betting odds of what team he will be next year. And the Texans were number one on that list. Like, they are constantly going to be mentioned with big names and big-time trades throughout this year. And we will see movement like we have been more in the NFL this offseason. And the Texans will be connected to a lot of it. So the question is, will they actually make one of these moves? Brandon Ayuk, I talked about him. Like, his family's running off and his girlfriend on Instagram about how it's his last year in San Francisco. They're making it seem like he's unhappy in San Francisco because he's not the guy. Because he probably knows he's not going to get a $20 million contract for them. So that's number four on my list. Number three, we'll go back to Kenyon Green. That is, honestly, this can make an argument for number one. Number three, left guard. That is, to me, the number one question on offense, besides running back. Left guard is such a huge question mark for this team because it affects the center position with Juice Scruggs. Like, I do believe you could go into next year with Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs, and Jarrett Patterson and be okay. But I would like them to be better than okay at those positions. I would like Nick Caserio some way to attack this position in the draft or through a free agency or through a minor trade like they even did last year for Shaq Mason and solidify the left guard position and let Juice Scruggs be your center. If they don't make a move, they better be right. Like they have to be right about Kenyon Green if they don't move aggressively for that spot. I think going into next year with just this huge question mark about health and development with Kenyon Green would be a mistake. Like they really have to evaluate what he is, and that's challenging because he's been so hurt and played so little in the NFL. Like they have to feel confident in their decision to keep Kenyon Green and make him your left guard next year if that's the path they take. I don't care about replacing him if he's a first-round pick. First-round busts happen all the time. Like the thing about being a manager or a general manager in the NFL, like if you guys are bosses, you know this. Sometimes you hire people and they're bad. Sometimes you hire people and they're great. But if you hire someone that's bad and then you continue to let them just be bad at their job, it's a reflection on you most of the time than it is on that person because you could just move on. And even though Kenyon Green would cost the Texans some salary cap if they just moved on, well, he can just sit on the bench, frankly. So they have to be right and make a decision about left guard and Kenyon Green and what his future is. The next one, number two, will Nick Caserio sign a big fish? Like the trade? I don't think they will. I don't think that if Jonathan Grenard's contract exceeds $14 million, $15 million, they will be in that market. If Josh Allen is made available and not tagged by the Jaguars, I don't think the Texans will be in that market. Same thing with the wide receivers. Same thing with a guy like Patrick Queen. Same thing with L'Jarius Sneed and Jalen Johnson. Like those are the big names that are really out there. Most of them are on defense, so if you were going to do it, I kind of like the idea. But will Nick Caserio spend big on one or two players and then kind of go to the lower end of the market to fill out the starting roster? I think that would be a mistake just because of how many free agents they have. As much as I like Jonathan Grenard and I like Blake Cashman, like you have to do some bargain bin shopping this offseason and some really good talent evaluating to make sure that your team is set up for success next year, no matter how much you spend on one or two players. Like they just don't have a ton of money to spend with the amount of roster spots that they have open. And then the number one storyline for me this Texans offseason is really simple. We saw throughout the year how much better the offense was with C.J. Stroud when Devin Singletary was moving. Like when they got motor to have success in this offense, everything was so much easier. Even when Tank Dell was hurt and the offense wasn't as good as it was before Tank Dell got hurt, they had more success with the good run game. And even though it's the NFL, and today's NFL, you don't need like that dominant 1,000, 1,500-yard rusher. You need something. And that's me why my number one story of the offseason is who was going to be RB1 for the Houston Texans in 2024. I am very open to the idea of going to Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry. You know, one of the ideas I've pitched to Jeremy and Joel is get Derrick Henry and Devin Singletary. Like maybe you can get two running backs for $9 million because I don't think Damian Pierce is going to be a fit or potentially even on this roster when the season starts this upcoming September. But that to me is my number one storyline of the offseason because I think it's the most important position that they have to address. And there's a bunch of different ways they can attack it. Like the thing about this offense that benefits them versus other teams is we've seen great success within the San Francisco 49ers offense, the Kyle Shanahan offense, with lesser named talent. Like, obviously, Christian McCaffrey's crushing it. But, like, think about Raheem Mostert. Raheem Mostert's 32 years old, goes to Miami this year, and turns the clock back to when he was in San Francisco, who I think he's a free agent even. Like, that's a guy, Jeff Wilson, who was the third string running back in Miami. There are options out there for you, is my point. That you can bring in guys, and as long as they understand how to work in this scheme, they can have some success for sure. All right, it's the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. Coming up next, we're going to welcome Abigail into sports radio. We're going to do a draft, and I've got some quick thoughts on the college football playoff format that will be voted on this week. That's next here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Final segment of the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. We'll get to our Valentine's Day draft just here in a second. A couple news items that came down today. One from the Houston Texans, I guess from a courtroom. The attorneys for the Houston Texans owner Janice McNair will seek to dismiss a guardianship case brought to her by her oldest son after Harris County judge ruled she will not have to undergo a medical examination. That's a lot of words that I understand, but I don't really know what would be next. So I guess we just wait to see how it plays out. I've talked about this before. I don't think it necessarily has this massive impact on the Houston Texans going forward. Now, if Kerry were to get control of the team, that could change my view dramatically because it just brings in a bunch of questions we don't know the answer to. But at least for now, it seems like everything is staying status quo. We're going to have the college football playoff vote. They expect it to be approved. The College Football Playoff Board of Managers, they expect the 5+7 format to be approved, which would be the top five power conference champions. I'm still confused about the Pac-12. I read the ESPN story. I don't really understand what's going on with the Pac-12. They're allowed to keep their conference. They're a two-person conference. So I guess, in theory, Oregon State and Washington State, who are going to be playing six Mountain West teams next year, could somehow get ranked in the top 12 and get an automatic bid, even though they're actually only a two-team conference? Like, are they playing a conference championship game? I'm still trying to figure out, like, what they're actually going to do with these two teams this next season. It's one of the most bizarre things we'll ever see in college football. The fact that they're not, like, forcing them to just merge with the Mountain West or another conference or give up the name of the Pac-12, it's just bizarre to me. Virginia asks, what percentage of Joe's shirts are ESPN? Okay, I have a blue one, a red one, an orange one, and a green one. That's four. I have a lot of shirts. So I'm going to say like 2%, Virginia. I know that's
Wait, do you not have the John and Lance one with Dell?
I do not. I need to get it, though. I know there's still a bunch back there, especially the ones that say also with Raheel, because that's my guy. So if we still have some of those, I might steal one.
Yeah, I think there's a couple, so you could use them.
Yeah, I might have to. So I might have to steal a black one, too, as well. But, like, John Lance Dell, I love those guys. But, like, where's the Killer Bees t-shirt? Why don't we get one? I know we're not John Lance. That's the answer to the question. All right, we got, like, 5 minutes left to go on the show. So we're going to do this quickly. We're going to do our Valentine's Day draft. That's Abigail Hong. If you have not been introduced to her, she's on Twitter, at Abigail Hong. But the G is off her last name on Twitter, and she's going to change it at some point.
Yeah, it wouldn't let me put the G's. So I'm going to change it in like a week, so
okay.
Don't worry.
All right, but we're going to do a Valentine's Day draft. The best part, the worst part, dinner, best thing to do when you're single. We're going to do a snake draft, so you go first, I'll go twice. Or would you like to go first or second? I'll let you decide.
I mean, I can go first.
Okay, you'll go first. You can take any of these in any order you want.
Okay.
And then we'll figure out who has the best list. We'll put it out on Twitter, and we'll let the people vote and decide who has the best list. So you're up first.
Okay, so the best, I would say the best or the worst part about Valentine's Day, I would always delete my social media for Valentine's Day because I hate, like, every single time that it comes to Valentine's Day, I always am either single or not, like, yeah. So basically, I would delete my social media and I hate it.
So social media makes you sad. That's the worst part.
Yeah, because everybody decides they have a boyfriend or they're in love or whatever, you know?
All right, I'm going to do best part. Even though they charge the prices, I like bringing home flowers. I like, you know, making my wife happy with them. She loves flowers. I'm supposed to get them every month. I'm pretty good most months. that I get him at least once to make her feel special, but I still like getting flowers. So I'm going to say giving flowers will be my best. Dinner for me, like I'm going to be I don't know if I'm selfish here. I don't really care. It's for both of us. Mainly, I mean, it's my wife, so like, I know what she likes. I think a steak dinner is still like the best dinner you can do on Valentine's Day. Maybe it's because she runs an Italian restaurant, so we don't really eat Italian food anymore, except when it comes from work. So like we're kind of out on Italian food for the most part. So I'm gonna go with a steak dinner as
like
the
where?
Dinner choice. Oh, like, I have to choose?
Yeah, like where?
Well,
where do you get your
steak?
We
don't really do free plugs, but like if I want to spend way too much money, I go to Perry's.
Okay, that's yeah. My favorite.
That's the one at Baybrook, right?
Yeah.
So that's where we mostly go. We started a new thing where we go somewhere else and then we go to Perry's afterwards, so we don't spend like $300 on dinner. So we eat somewhere else, like appetizers wise, and then share a steak and something. So it's a little bit cheaper and not totally making us broke for the next like month when we do it. All right. That's so fair. I've got my dinner and my best part. You're up
next.
You have two picks.
I'll do best thing to do when you're single. I would usually invite like probably like 20, 30 people and just make a huge charcuterie board and then just like fellowship with people.
So a singles party.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Kind of sad, but
no,
it's fine.
No, it's fine. It's going to be better than my answer, I'll tell you that.
What's your answer?
Oh, you'll see. But you're up against snake draft.
Okay,
so you need a dinner and the best part.
Well, dinner, I would probably say, okay, my favorite is 60 Vines. They also have a huge charcuterie board.
That's just like your
and
thing.
And they have wine, so.
Wine's great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'll do my worst part. I think it's so funny. We talked about this on the Killer Bees. The worst thing I've ever done, it just made me mad about Valentine's Day, was I bought a bunch of chocolates and I accidentally bought the ones that have all the random flavors because most of the flavors are bad. So maybe I guess the worst part is not being able to read and comprehend, but I read the box wrong or I just grabbed a box and like 30% of the chocolates got eaten. Cause like, and the worst part is like they give you that little guide. The guide sucks. Half the time the chocolate doesn't look like it's supposed to look. So you're playing this guessing game of like if you're going to get something you like or something you think is disgusting.
No, like the ones with the caramel, like I hate any feelings. So I just want the chocolate. Like,
yep.
Don't like that. I got a huge one yesterday and I was like, oh, I'll be eating one of these and that's it.
All right. So, and then my last one, worst thing for me. Yes, VBS, I just said Joe can't read or comprehend. That's a quote. Yeah, you're right. For one time, I say so much stuff that gets me in trouble on the station. It's unbelievable. I never used to do that in radio until I got here. And it's like foot and mouth 90% of the time. Very quickly here, we got about a minute left in the show, a minute and a half. So when I moved to Houston and I was single and I didn't know anyone, I started, I finally adventured out into solo movie going. I am all about like just going to a movie by myself. So when I was single, that's what I would do. If there's a movie I liked that I wanted to go see, I would go see a movie by myself. I don't know if I want to be at Abigail's sad party of all the singles out there. So like I'm just going to hang out by myself. So if I'm sad, I'm by myself. Thankfully, I'm married now, so I don't have to worry about that ever again in my life. Fingers crossed. But yeah, I would go to a movie by myself.
Wait, am I the only one that's not married?
No.
Okay.
Andrew, Sean.
Oh yeah, Andrew,
Del.
Sean, Del. Yeah. Okay.
Brian and I are the only producers that are married.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Good.
So all right. So what do you have left? Best part.
I think best part.
Yep.
Best part is probably seeing that love still exists. I feel like after.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. I feel like after COVID answer. Though, like it was like hookup culture. So seeing that love still exists. Is
Do you have? I was trying to think of this earlier because I was listening to. I was watching, not listening. I was watching The Wedding Singer. I think that's my favorite Valentine's Day movie. I know it's not Valentine's Day, but it's like my favorite movie. Like
mine's The Proposal. That one's really
pretty good. I love Adam Sandler. I think The Wedding Singer is low-key Adam Sandler's best movie.
Oh, I think so, too.
That he has. All right, that does it for us. We'll have Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis up next. I will be back on Friday with the bullpen. I'll be back tomorrow with the Bees live at the Decoy. Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis is up next.